For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another. With insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL, here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am Drew Mandel. I am your host. The man on my right of my screen is Dave Minuk. The man on the bottom of the screen is Ezra Ginsberg. We're here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets in action later on tonight. Preseason game number 3. They're in the capital of the province of Alberta to face the Edmonton Oilers. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Hope everyone has had a nice week and have been enjoying the first couple of preseason games for the Winnipeg Jets.
Is Vancouver the capital of British Columbia, or is it Victoria?
It's Victoria.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. You mentioned that Edmonton's the capital of Alberta. I couldn't remember.
Was that news to you?
Well, no, I couldn't remember. I usually am pretty good with my Canadian capitals. American capitals, like, I have no idea, because a lot of them are very random.
That's true. They are like, very random.
What's the capital of Kentucky? Is it Lexington?
No, it's Frankfurt, where Laura's from.
Oh, I should probably know that. I was there.
You weren't in Frankfurt.
No, that's true. I wasn't, but I was in Kentucky. But yeah, I definitely need to, I'm with Rob. I need to take another, you know, Canadian or North America geography class. But yeah, boys, a couple of games this weekend. You know, it's been a little bit weird. Like, we're in day 10 of training camp, but we've only had a couple of exhibition games, which I imagine, you know, the Jets coaching staff likes, because we know that they like the practices a little bit more sometimes than the games, especially the early games. But it's ramping up here, and we're getting very close to the regular season. So it's going to be a fun next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, it's certainly the entire preseason to me, and I mean, we'll talk about it throughout the course of the show, of course, is a bit of a drag. This entire, just get on with it at this point in time. I don't know why it needs to be as long as it is, Dave. It just seems to be, you know, tedious at a point of time. But, you know, that being said, it is what it is, as the cliche goes. And here we have game number 3 and 4 for the Jets preseason, taking place tonight and tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the silver lining, Drew, is the fact that, unlike other years or other Canadian, like we talked about last week, the Calgary Flames, for example, who have almost as many forwards as the Jets have players.
Yeah,
you know, the Jets, it's a lot more relevant with the Jets. You're seeing, you know, guys that, you know, you basically got the Jets and the Moose, not the Jets, the Moose, and random bodies. And so I think that's probably a benefit for both the coaching staff, fans, media, is that it's a lot more condensed. And obviously this week there were a few changes made. There were 3 players released from their PTOs. And then you had, of course, Tyrell Bauer and Dmitry Kuzmin sent to their respective junior teams. So they've cut it down, I think, from 44 to 39 now. And so it's a little more relevant. And that's kind of the nice thing, is that you're getting a chance to see, you know, more prospects and that sort of thing. And that's what Palm Reese has done. And that's why guys like Johnny Kovacevic and others are garnering attention, because of that ability. And you'll see Declan Chisholm, he's playing in his first preseason game wearing a Jets uniform, as well as Jeff Mlott. So you're going to see guys who are a little more relevant to the organization than sometimes the fodder that is trotted out during these training camps.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to just quickly mention something there, Drew, and then you know, you can get in here. Like, you mentioned Johnny Kovacevic. Scotty Billick had a good article. Well, has a good article in today's Winnipeg Sun about him. And, you know, Dave has been, you know, trumpeting him.
So does Mike Sawatsky in today's Free Press. So
yeah, so it's
a lot of Kovacevic coverage, if you want.
It's Johnny Kovacevic Day here in Winnipeg, right, boys? But you know, I have been following him, you know, through these first 2 games, and he's looked really solid with Logan Stanley. And we'll get more into the game on Wednesday night against the Oilers. Obviously, no McDavid, no Draisaitl, no Nugent Hopkins. I mean, it was essentially an AHL lineup. But, you know, there's a lot of positives. And, you know, Dave, one of the guys that, you know, stood out to me that I didn't know a lot about was Mikey Essiemont. And he's a guy that's obviously going to factor in probably to the top 6 of the Moose, right? So him and Pagansky looked really good. And yeah, I mean, you're not playing, you know, the big boys of the Oilers, but you're playing other guys that are going to play in the AHL. So I think you have to look at these games, not necessarily, you know, in terms of, you know, what the lines are going to look like, you know, in the regular season or the results. You have to look at, like, you know, what's going on with some of these prospects, as you mentioned. Obviously, you know, Jansen Harkins and Evgeny Svechnikov, they're trying to earn a spot on that fourth line. They each had 3 points in that game on Wednesday night. So the games are definitely going to ramp up here, and you're going to start to see, as you mentioned, Dave, more of the Jets regulars as we get into the games next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, of course, I mentioned the Jets. They're in Edmonton to play the Oilers later tonight, I think 6 o'clock. Puck drop. You can catch that game on TSN, if I'm not mistaken, and as well with our friends on CJOB if you want to listen to the audio version. Svechnikov going to be in the lineup. You mentioned Jansen Harkins. He's going to be in the lineup. Essiemont is going to be in the lineup. So there are some guys who are sort of, you know, certainly Cole Perfetti is going to be in the lineup, and I expect he would get a fair bit of ice time. Mark Scheifele is going to be in the lineup tonight. So that's the it's not going to be a strictly young team tonight. There are going to be some veterans because of the rules of the preseason. You have to field so many guys who've played so many NHL games, I guess, to try and make people feel as though they aren't getting scammed out of their money, that are paying good hard money to watch meaningless hockey. But, you know, that being said, there is going to be some interesting. I mean, Harkins and Svechnikov have garnered a lot of attention so far this preseason because they are sort of in that battle for those final spots for the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, our buddy Kenny Weeb wrote about it a lot this week in some of his articles, really talking about how there's, you know, 4, maybe 5 guys battling for those 2 spots on the fourth line. If you assume that Riley Nash has one of those spots locked down, and I think it's fairly safe to say, and if you assume that Vesalainen has the spot locked down next to Stastny and Lowry on the third line, then you got, you know, Harkins, Svechnikov, Toninato, Gustafsson, maybe even Perfetti a little bit, battling for those 2 spots on the fourth line. So that's really what you're watching for, you know, I think, in these preseason games, to see who steps up. I'd say right now it's Svechnikov and Harkins who have the leg up for those final 2 spots on the Winnipeg Jets fourth line.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, especially Harkins, just because of the fact that, you know, he's been a member of the Jets now, for a full-time member, for a couple of years, right? But yeah, Svechnikov has been, you know, impressive. And even though, as we talked about, you know, you're playing an Oilers team that didn't have a lot of their NHL regulars, he's still making the most of it, right? Like, if Svechnikov didn't do anything, we would be talking about how he didn't do anything against a team that didn't have NHL regulars, right?
Missed opportunity.
Absolutely, Drew. So I agree with you. I think, put it this way, when the Jets acquired Svechnikov, and we should mention he did sign the AHL contract, but the Jets can obviously sign him to the NHL contract, it was kind of unclear, you know, like, is he really going to factor into the Jets' plans? And then we talked about how, you know, it was going to depend a lot on training camp. I also think, you know, David Gustafsson, and I know Dave M will get in here, but I think, you know, Gustafsson on the wing is very intriguing, because if you think about that fourth line, I mean, there's a lot more talent guys on the fourth line that we've been seeing than there was last year. All due respect to guys like Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis. I mean, these guys are going to have the ability to create more goals. And, you know, we don't have to rehash what happened last year, but Harkins missed how many games as a healthy scratch, right? So I think that Harkins is a guy that, you know, I have him in the top 12, or at the very least the top 13. And I agree with Ken Weeb, and I agree with you, Drew. I think, you know, Riley Nash has that inside track, you know, just the amount of years he's played in the NHL. He's a veteran, you know, 30, 31 years old. So it looks like he's going to get that fourth line center role. But yeah, to me, it's probably between David Gustafsson, Evgeny Svechnikov. I kind of have Dominic Toninato probably as the 13th forward, just based on his contract. And again, you know, his NHL experience. But getting back to what you said before, guys, Cole Perfetti has looked really impressive. And it's really tough to judge the situation right now, because going into training camp, you know, I think most people would agree that he was maybe a bit of a long shot to make the Jets top 12 or make, you know, make the top 13. But I'm going to be really interested to see, you know, how Perfetti plays tonight, because we know that the big boys, McDavid, Dreisaitl, I think Nugent Hopkins is going to be in the lineup. So now Perfetti is going up against some of the best players in the world. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch how Perfetti does tonight. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he does stick with the Jets. I personally still think he's going to spend some time with the Moose this year, but he has been very impressive. The skill set is just, he just oozes skill every time you watch him. I mean, he's definitely ready for the NHL.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's funny. I was watching on Sunday, and it kind of flew under the radar, but that was actually the first time he got to put on a Jets jersey in front of in front of a crowd, because obviously with last year, all he did was play in the AHL in front of no fans and wearing a Moose uniform. So first time for the 2020 first rounder to get a chance to wear a Jets uniform in front of a, you know, I think it was 13 plus at Canada Life on Sunday, and took him about a period. And then by the second period, I thought he made a nice play or two in the first, but by the second period, you could see he was starting to get that confidence that he had created for himself last season and start to be a little more creative, use that the high level of intelligence that he has. So, Cole Perfetti for sure. Jansen Harkins, who, you know, is kind of that forgotten. I said, like, he had Evgeny Svechnikov made a good impression, but nobody really had an impression of him, especially based on the fact that nobody saw Detroit last year. Mm-hmm. But Jansen
and
Harkins,
you saw, you didn't want to watch.
That's right. But Jansen Harkins had a chance to kind of reintroduce himself and say, like, hi, remember me, I'm Jansen Harkins. And he showed off what he is, which is he too is a pretty smart player, and he's a hard worker, and he's positionally sound. So, you know, there's another guy who's fighting for it. And Andrew Kopp mentioned Dominic Toninato as a player who stood out to him when he was asked about, you know, guys during one of the days of training camp this week. Andrew Kopp said Dominic Toninato is a guy who stood out to him for what he's been able to do. So I think it's a good problem to have for the Winnipeg Jets, is that there are a lot of guys who are capable. Riley Nash on Sunday, I kind of wanted to watch him because I hadn't really watched him too closely. And I was impressed, you know, because, you know, to the point that, as he just said, this is a game in the, you know, preseason that's fairly chaotic. It actually matches more an AHL style game than an NHL style game, generally speaking, until you get to the latter, you know, the later, sorry, games of the preseason, you know, game six, game seven. And I thought Riley Nash showed how consistent he was and how, you know, calm he is with the puck. So I think he's, you know, he's the quintessential veteran fourth line center for Paul Maurice that he's going to feel comfortable with. So to me, that's also a good addition. So there's a lot of good things happening for the Winnipeg Jets, because, like I said, it's not 300 players. It's just that smaller group that you can kind of see what you've got and who you've got.
It is not only just good things happening for the Winnipeg Jets, there's good things happening for Illegal Curve. We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend Sean Reynolds. You know him as Rennie of the Kenny and Rennie Show. Sean, good morning. First of all, the first question I have for you, you're wearing a hat, so it's not really going to be effective, but how does Jim Toth feel about you going for his crown as best Winnipeg media member with the flow? Best flow in the Winnipeg media.
It's funny you should bring that up. We were side by side during one of the preseason games, and there was a lot of tension in the air. I'll be honest with you. We got it with a knife. We were kind of eyeing each other up and taking a look. And I think he feels threatened, guys. I think he truly feels threatened. And, you know, you got to push people to get them to their best. So he's going to have to raise his game, because I'm coming for the crown.
Well, I'm just saying, one of you is on TV, one of you is on radio. I don't know if that factors into anything at all in this neck and neck battle, as it were. But I do enjoy the flow you got going on there, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yes, Sean, we obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. Two preseason games in the book. We got a game tonight, a game tomorrow night. You know, I guess, what are your takeaways so far from thus far through what I think has been a fairly straightforward and a fairly, I'm going to say, professional training camp for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I mean, takeaways, I think we knew right off the bat, based on the moves made over the summer, that the defense core was fairly locked up. And I think yesterday was really telling in that they had an NHL group, and then Paul Maurice, I'd asked him about it, and he said, no, don't make too much of a big deal out of it. And then ended by saying, you know, the guys battling for jobs were out here on the ice. The guys not were over on the other side of the ice. So Nash was with that NHL group. So I kind of take a look at it and think there's a competition for four spots right now on this team. Three of them are playing spots. One of them are going to be the guy who kind of, you know, is going to be the move in between. Or I guess maybe you could go with two forwards if you wanted to. But I take a look at this, and I think that there's not a lot of drama. I think the writing has been on the wall even before camp about what we can expect. Now, I know everyone loves chaos, and they want to see a guy like Cole Perfetti come in here, a guy like Ville Heinola come in here and upset the law and order that has been structured in by the coaches. I just don't know that I see it. We can dig into it further if you want, but I don't know that I see that kind of a situation coming in here. Those guys got to come in Paul Maurice has said that this for a long time, and he showed it with a guy like Patrick Laine when he was here with Kyle Connor. When they bring those guys up, the Cole Perfettis, the guys you know are going to be skilled guys at the NHL level, he wants to bring them up in the role that he wants them to play. And I just don't know that there's as much of that space on these, you know, recent NHL Jets teams as we used to see back in the day when guys like Kyle Connor could walk onto the second or first line right out of the AHL, or in the case of Patrick Laine at 18, walk into a top six role. It just, there's not enough space for that. I know it frustrates people, but the mindset for this organization is when you've got those kind of players, they're better off seasoning and getting ice time in the A than they are playing a limited role in limited minutes at the NHL level.
Sean, before I ask you a Jets question, I just want to commend you on your Eeyore cake for your daughter's birthday. It was beautiful.
Very impressive.
And I'm going to have to talk to you about how to do that because my wife makes the cakes. Shout out to Naomi. So I'm going to have to talk to you and you're going to have to, you know, share some of your artistic skill with me because that was beautiful. And my son loves Eeyore.
I was going to ask, how did you get such a good picture of Ezzy to put on a cake? But that's maybe a little insulting.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, it is, no. But you just did it. You just did it. So, yeah.
That was a low blow, Drew, but I'll take it. You know, talking about, you know, some of the low drama kind of players, and we know that, you know, it's the third line and the fourth line forward spots that are open. And we have to ask you about Christian Vesalainen because he's obviously been a hot topic, you know, since training camp started here in Winnipeg. And a lot of people, you know, in our chat are weighing in about Vesalainen. And I'm sure, you know, on the first episode of the season for Kenny and Rennie, you know, you guys were talking a lot about Vesalainen and getting a lot of comments. What have you kind of thought so far of his play in the preseason? Sure, it's early, but do you see him being a good fit on that third line with Adam Lowry and Paul Stastny? And just kind of give us your overall thoughts of his game.
Well, it's telling how Paul Maurice has structured this camp, because I think what he's showing you is what he wants the team to look like. He didn't mess around. He very much just right off the bat was like, look, this is what this team I'm hoping it can be. And now it's up to the players and a guy like Christian Vesalainen to follow through on that. That third line potentially works because you've got Adam Lowry who does what Adam Lowry does. But then you've got Paul Stastny, and the flip-flop of Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny means you get that Paul Stastny, that mentor-like character that they've always just liked to take and put with young guys. It worked back in the day with Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers. It worked last year when Dubois was having a little bit of problems, and you'd put Stastny as kind of that safety valve. So I think what they're hoping is that you can put Stastny there and then maybe unlock what we all know and see from Christian Vesalainen. And when we watch him in practice, he's got this phenomenal shot and he's got this skill. But you know, so did a guy like Peluso when he was here with the Winnipeg Jets. If you guys remember back in the day, Peluso in practice would rip that puck. It was him and Evander Kane is who had the nicest shot.
Sean, didn't he win the All-Star hardest shot one year when they did the Jets? I think he did.
I'm not sure if I think that rings a bell, but what I know is he every once in a while would have those shots where he'd kind of come down, he'd be really far out and he'd kind of turn to the net and snap and it would be bar down over the goaltender's shoulder. And you'd be like, holy smokes, where is this coming from? Why don't we see this in a game? And you never really did see it in a game, right? And what you learn is that NHL players with really phenomenal shots, what makes them great is the ability to get open and be in the right place to use that shot. Brett Hull was never the fastest player on the ice, but he was always the guy who was open and tucking it away. Kyle Connor is a great example of a guy who just always knows where to be to get his shot off. So they're trying to unlock that out of Christian Vesalainen. And if they can, I think they hope that you can get what you get out of Lowry, you get defensive consciousness and smarts out of Stastny. And if you can unlock Vesalainen, and then you get some of that scoring from the third line that guys like Brandon Tanev earned you when they were here, Mason Appleton when he was here last year. Here's the issue, guys, is I really haven't seen the click. I don't know about you guys, and I know that when I'm watching the games, you see some people who are like, oh, man, Christian Vesalainen is popping. And I think what you see a lot from fans is projection. They tell you what they want to happen in their comments. So they look and they say, man, this guy's phenomenal. Cole Perfetti needs to be on the top line of this team right now. And they don't necessarily see some of the, you know, defensive inefficiencies that maybe, you know, the coach is seeing. The coach definitely talked about that Svechnikov, Harkins, and Perfetti line and how, you know, once they went up against higher competition in the third period, the ice started to tilt. That's what coaches are looking for, right? So I don't think that we've seen Christian Vesalainen grab the brass ring yet. I take a look. I think Cole Perfetti has outperformed Christian Vesalainen in this camp. I think Harkins has. I think Svechnikov has. So I think it's a little bit of a problem because what the Jets want is that to work with Christian Vesalainen. And if you're comparing him to a guy like David Gustafsson, who really looks like they haven't given him much of a chance to show everything he can do based on the guys that they have him playing with, Christian Vesalainen has been given every opportunity so far this camp to shine with the right players beside him to bring him along. I'm not saying it's a failed experiment yet, but what I am saying is he has not shot out of the gate and he has not grabbed that spot and not released it. And Paul Maurice talked about it the other day. This is how it works with young players. You get your opportunity, you grab it, and you don't let go. Christian Vesalainen, in my opinion, has not grabbed that yet.
Well, Sean, just to clarify, to confirm, I should say, I did some research. 2013-14, Anthony Peluso, hardest shot at the Winnipeg Jets skills competition, 103.9 miles per hour.
You're going there far back in the archives there, Dave.
I had to go into the Illegal Curve archives, but I found the answer.
And also had his career high in goals that year with two.
there we go. Perfectly showing what he was capable of on both sides of it. This great shot that just never really translated.
You know, we're going down a rabbit hole here, but I could have sworn he had that those two goals came in one game. I just checked. They didn't, but there was one game where he played well and he made an impact. And I think at the end of the game, it was a blowout. The Jets were beating whomever. And he actually got power play time for about 30 seconds. And I can vividly remember, like, he took those 30 seconds and you could see how happy he was to get them. This is late in the third period. And as soon as that clock hit 30, he basically just turned and skated off the ice as quickly as humanly possible, just so that he wouldn't get caught on a line change or something. I have a vivid memory of it. I have to go back and I think it was a Saturday afternoon even. I'd have to go
back.
Hey,
Drew, you're record. Supposed to use this time during, not Sean's time, to be doing research, not to be trying to remember research. Come on.
And Sean, it's amazing.
You
it's
started
amazing
the that research, Dave. You
yeah, but
started
I did,
the research.
But Sean, I did it efficiently. I did it while you were talking, and I had the answer the moment you were done. Drew's and fumbling
Sean,
around.
Drew remembers that, but he doesn't remember to wish Dave M a happy birthday last week. Like, it's unbelievable what Drew remembers.
The difference is I never knew. Cake reminder out there
exactly
for the birthday stuff.
All right, let's get the show back.
I never knew when Dave's birthday was. It's not that I couldn't remember.
And Drew's
it
just
Drew
was getting me back because I too didn't wish him a happy birthday. So let's just call a spade. It's fine.
Dave and I have the relationship. It's a perfect one. Neither of us expect birthday wishes from
exactly
one another.
Exactly.
I just want to say before we move on, yeah, rabbit holes make for good viewing. So I'm glad we fell down one.
Well, you know, Sean, like, well, you know, we're having a lot of fun right now. And, you know, we tend to do that on this show and you guys do that on Kenny and Rennie. And I think that's one of the themes we're noticing with the Winnipeg Jets. It's one thing that I thought was absent the last few years. It was a very serious group. It's always like, we're focused, Stanley Cup. We get that. Everybody wants to win the Stanley Cup. Everybody's focused. But I think that's one thing we've seen injected, you know, Nate Schmidt. And we've talked about how fun he is and what kind of almost a Dustin Byfuglien type atmosphere he brings into that locker room on the ice with the fans, with the media. So are you seeing that? Are you seeing that? And how are you seeing it translate with this team having a little more fun? Everyone seeming to have a more of a smile. Are you noticing that? And do you think that's going to have an impact early on in the season?
Yeah. Yes to all of the above. I'm noticing it. I think it's going to have an impact. Now I want to couch this by saying, you know, last year, we did everything via Zoom, so we didn't get as close a look at this team as we are this year. I do think this team had fun last year. I think that they were, you know, they were gelling and they really cared for each other. But a guy like Nate Schmidt and that energy level are just, you know, from everything that you hear. And I'm saying this not since he got here. You know, when I covered Vegas back in the day, you heard this about him. I think he's unparalleled in the league in the amount of energy that he brings to a team. From what we've heard, I haven't experienced it. Well, we have experienced. We had him on Kenny and Rennie the day that he signed, and we've all seen him. He's a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun, that guy. And you can tell by, you know, every player talks about it. So, yes, I do think that we're seeing it more often. Yes, I do think he ratchets that up. And yes, I do think it's important. This is a team, as you mentioned, Dave, that in the past, you know, there was storm clouds that would gather over this team, even when things were going good. I mean, if I remember correctly, Blake Wheeler talked about a time that, you know, he just wasn't having fun with it, right? And they were winning and things were going good, but there was all this kind of pressure and this little bit of gnarliness and this edge to it. I'm paraphrasing and I hope I got that right. But I mean, that was the sense you got from that team. And a guy like, you know, Matt Hendricks was a guy who they vocally said they brought in, you know, and then he went away and they brought him back because he helped with that element of kind of like softening the curve, you know, the edges and everything like that. But I think, you know, the Jets, we know, guys, covering the Jets about 5 years ago, the room was, you know, they didn't like talking to the media lots. It could be a little snarly when they had conversations with you. They did not have fun with that. It was sometimes hard to go find places just to have a conversation with players. And we get that, you know, the role of the media along with players sometimes, you know, makes for clashing. We get that. I understand that. It's part of the job. We've got a job to do. They've got a job to do. And sometimes it doesn't line up and that can create, you know, friction. But I always did notice, you know, in my role, you know, for national television, when the Jets were out, I'd go cover other teams. And a lot of times you'd leave and you'd go and you'd, maybe it's the fresh, you know, the clean slate, but I'd feel a lot more welcome in other rooms than I would in the Jets room, the team that I cover, the players that you see all the time that you'd think that you'd have these relationships with. And sometimes you'd be developing relationships with players that you only covered for a couple of weeks, far deeper than you were with the team that you actually covered, right? We've talked about this. It's getting to be that the vast majority of the people that you talk to on this Jets team, the vast majority of the players they're really smart. They've got really good attitudes. They're fun to have conversations with. I mean, it's not just Nate Schmidt. Brendan Dillon comes in. What a gem this guy is. And then Nick Ehlers has always been phenomenal. Cole Perfetti has really showed well. Guys on the outside of the system. I had a long conversation with Dylan Sandberg in the press box the other day. Great kid. Kovacevic, phenomenal kid. Yep. And then even if you get to the guys who aren't exactly, you know, sunshine and rainbows, but they're still a lot of fun. Like Connor Hellebuck will tell you exactly what he thinks, but he tells you what he thinks. He's not hiding it or whatever. He gets it out there. Josh Morrissey is just absolute 100% class. Dylan DeMello is great guy to talk to. So it up and down in this room, it is chock full of guys now who are good character guys who can have conversations. And it has clearly been a focus of the organization to bring those type of players in. And I think what they're trying to do, Dave, is achieve exactly what you're talking about. Create an environment where there's fun and people are enjoying themselves and they can communicate and they can laugh and they can have fun and they can shrug off the losses and they can enjoy the wins. And they believe that that's one of the things that's going to get them a little bit further and a little bit further. We've all heard this team talks nonstop about Stanley Cup aspirations this season. They're not hiding what they're trying to do here. This is a team that is absolutely going for it. And that's one of the elements I think they feel that they've got better at since last season.
Sean Reynolds is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Sean, you were talking about, you know, great guys, great interviews in the room. One of the best quality individuals on the Winnipeg Jets team is Eric Comrie. Just, you know, a prince of a man.
Yeah.
You know, very, very well spoken, very soft spoken. There's a lot of consternation, I would say. People are looking at Eric Comrie, they're looking at his track record at the NHL level, and they're saying they don't know if he can do and be as reliable, let's say, as Laurent Brossoit was for the Winnipeg Jets. How much of a concern do you think, you know, the backup goaltending spot is for the Winnipeg Jets? Or is it a function of, look, there's going to be every NHL team probably has a weakness because of the salary cap? And if you're going to have a quote-unquote weakness, you're probably okay with it being the backup goalie when you have Connor Hellebuck as your number one goalie.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it. Now, I think if you're – I mean, you take a look at a model like the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have maybe arguably the best goaltender in the world, the other person in that conversation. is Connor Hellebuyck, right? And so they don't rely on anybody else, whereas a team like the Vegas Golden Knights had two really, really great goalies the last couple of years. That almost caused problems, right? So I think you're right. In the places that you are going to have weakness, and you are, there, no matter what happens, you are going to have a weakness somewhere in your lineup. If it's your backup goaltender, the goalie that plays, you know, the lowest amount of games behind a workhorse who can play a lot more games than your average starting goaltender, that's the place to have it. I think they've got, you know, right now a little bit of a hole on the bottom end. The young players are going to come and try and fill this role. But I think if you take a look at the teams that went really deep the last couple of years, you know, and we saw it in that Canadiens Jets series last year, the fourth line of the Montreal Canadiens ate up every single line of the Winnipeg Jets. That's the kind of depth you need. But they can address that potentially at the trade deadline if they don't feel they've got what they've got here. Same thing with the backup goaltender. Those are easy problems to fix if you need to get there, right? But, I mean, give him a chance. Give Eric Comrie a chance here to show what he can do. Here's the deal, guys. Lauren Brossoit, we talked about, you know, how good he was with this team. But even the Winnipeg Jets have admitted, they didn't talk about it much as it was happening, but they talked about it at the end of the last season. They openly talk about it now. They weren't there with their defense core. They didn't have a good enough defense core, and they had a goaltender who erased a lot of those problems. Well, they brought in two guys. They feel they're a lot more balanced. If Eric Comrie is going to get, you know, results from this team, maybe what you have now is the defense core being the eraser, right? Hey, he's coming in tonight. Mm-hmm. We don't think that he's at the level of Connor Hellebuyck. Well, now it's your turn, defense. You had the years where we had to pick you up. Now it's your turn to pick us up on this front. It's a team game. Winnipeg Jets feel like their depth as a team is as solid as it has been since about the 2018-2019 season. That's where these guys got to show up. They have to turn Eric Comrie into a viable option by playing the proper team game to do it.
John, you mentioned Nick Ehlers earlier, and, you know, we were talking about this, you know, last week, this whole idea of, you know, Ehlers needing more even strength ice time and, you know, the first power play. And, you know, we've talked to you about this, you know, many times over the years. And the question I wanted to ask you is, how important do you think it is for Ehlers to get top power play unit time this year and to play regularly with Mark Scheifele? I know it's a loaded question, you know, because Scheifele and Wheeler have been, you know, Batman and Robin for so long, but, you know, you read Don Lucician in The Athletic and, you know, he's talking about how, you know, Ehlers really does need to get more power play time and more even strength time. So what are kind of your thoughts on that idea of Ehlers maybe getting a more of a regular shift with Scheifele either at even strength or on the power play?
Well, did you see the lineup for the game tonight, guys?
Yeah.
So Blake Wheeler, we haven't seen the lines yet, but Blake Wheeler is not playing, and nor is Pierre-Luc Dubois, and nor is Andrew Kopp. That means that Nick Ehlers is in, Kyle Connor is in, and Mark Scheifele is in. So I expect that to be the first line tonight, and I do think that Paul Maurice, he's not a time waster. He's looking at that for a specific reason. And I also do think that those three players being out, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Stastny is out, or Andrew Kopp, you could go that way, and Blake Wheeler are out. I think that, you know, one of the huge issues, and I'm going to bring this back to Ehlers, I'm not trying to duck the question, but one of the biggest issues for the Jets this year is going to be getting Pierre-Luc Dubois going. The whole thing about him not being in shape last year and that cost them, I don't buy that argument, guys. You know, lots of players find themselves in an injury and out of shape in a season and find a way to work their way back into it. I think that's an easy way of controlling the controllables, as the pros like to say. You know what? You didn't have the best season you wanted last year. Go into the offseason, get into the best possible shape that you can get, come back. That's going to help. And if they can convince him that that was the problem, here we go. I'm not convinced. But one of the things that happens is if Pierre-Luc Dubois isn't working on that second line with Nick Ehlers and with Andrew Kopp or Stastny, whoever comes up and down there, they can go to a more veteran-laden hockey IQ line alongside him, because we all saw that Dubois and I think Wheeler worked really good last year. I think Paul Maurice is taking a look at his options right now. And one of those options is moving Nick Ehlers onto that top line, where Nick Ehlers is a speed demon, so is Connor. And if you buy what Paul Maurice is selling, that Mark Scheifele is the fastest player on this team, then you can kill teams with speed. So back to what you were asking about Ehlers, I do think at 5-on-5, they need to find a way to get Nick Ehlers more ice time. I think that they have held the reins on this player long enough. Now, the argument is, like, we give him that ice time, he's succeeding in that ice time. If you gave him more, maybe it doesn't work. A coach can always say that. But you know what? Show us the other option to prove that that's the problem, right? Because right now he looks like a player that's being a little bit held back and not getting the opportunities that some other players on this team are, and sure looks like he deserves that opportunity. The power play thing, I'm totally on a different page than you guys. I think the Winnipeg Jets, the way it works with their top power play is they've got five options on that, and they're all equal options, right, for the most part. You're trying to get it to Kyle Connor for that one-timer, but Stastny is great in the slot, and we've shown him score some goals from there. Wheeler is, when you give him space, is great addition that puck out. Mark Scheifele is getting good at that and can still shoot that one-timer, and they were getting some goals from the point on that power play by the end. There's five options there. That secondary power play is entirely built around distracting everyone on the ice and getting Nick Ehlers to curl, getting him the puck with space to go in and shoot. He is option 1, A, B, C, D, E, and F. And then it goes to Pierre-Luc Dubois taking a one-timer. So I do think that they honor Nick Ehlers on that second power play by giving him kind of the whole power play. It's the Nick Ehlers power play, whereas the first power play is the Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor, Stastny power play. The second power play is the Nick Ehlers power play. Now, I couch that by saying maybe he's not on the top power play, but they should be using those two power plays as kind of a 1A and 1B. So on nights when Ehlers' power play unit is going, they should be the first ones out. And it shouldn't be any of this, that first power play taking up $1.30, $1.45, and giving them 15 seconds. So the utilization of that power play, I think, is the thing that I would tweak. I wouldn't tweak the personnel. I think you're just smashing a square peg into a round hole, or actually limiting Nick Ehlers by putting him on that top power play, because there's a whole bunch of other options. Give him his own power play, but give that power play equal time to the top power play as long as it's performing.
Sean, you get an A+ for that answer, man. Sean, I agree with everything you said there.
Thank you very much. Yeah. A+ on the cake, A+ on my answers. Boy, I'm firing on all cylinders, boys.
Yeah. You haven't seen these kind of grades in what, in 20 to 20, 30 never, years, something like that. Sean.
Never.
Anyways, never. Sean, never. I was throwing you a bone. I was giving you the benefit of the doubt there. Sean Reynolds is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him, of course, with his work with Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. You can find him with the Kenny and Rennie Show as well here on YouTube.
You know, Sean, it's hard to judge players and pairings based on the first couple of preseason games, because as I said earlier in the show, it's more of an AHL style. It's a lot more chaos. It's a lot less straight lines than what we're used to seeing with the NHL. But if you could draw some sort of conclusion, we've seen Brendan Dillon and Neil Pionk paired up together. And we saw Nate Schmidt and Josh Morrissey paired up together in different games. But what were your early impressions? And obviously you've watched them work together in camp. We saw Josh Morrissey joking around about what kind of player Nate Schmidt is. So obviously they're developing that sort of off-ice chemistry. What are you seeing so far from, again, limited sample size in the first couple of preseason games?
I think you're seeing pairs that are working on chemistry. I think you're seeing pairs that have, you know, are meeting each other and, you know, trying to figure each other out for the first time. I think though that's essentially what those players have told us about. They're working on chemistry with each other. I think a lot of times you'll see DeMello and Stanley out there, and to me, sometimes they pop as much as the other two lines because they know how to play with each other. And Dylan DeMello is you know, a phenomenal defenseman. And Logan Stanley, to me, looks like he's taken a step from last year. I think he's walked in with a kind of confidence and a swagger. What a way for him to end the season last year and go into the offseason feeling good about yourself, being like the one guy who victimized Carey Price like no one else did in the playoffs last year in that one game. Hey, I get to wear that badge, you know, for the rest of the summer. So I think he probably went and had another really great offseason and came out of it and now has confidence. And you'll notice the Jets are talking about him. He's not in a competition. Anyone who thought that this was going to be a competition between Logan Stanley and Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg, you know, before he got injured, coming into this camp. That never happened. The message to Logan Stanley was he'd earned that spot. He's an NHLer now. And that's his spot until, you know, as long as he can hold on to it. He looks to be doing all the things he can to hold on to it. I mean, the one thing I will say and that I've thought about when it comes to the way that they've structured this team is I don't know that there's a lot of but I don't know that there's a lot of juggling that can be done. Like it feels to me like Schmidt fits with Morrissey and Dylan fits with Pionk and Stanley fits with Dylan DeMello. Now you could pop Dylan DeMello up alongside Morrissey, which we've seen before, or you could put Pionk up there, but we do know that the Jets like this balance of big and small on their back lines. They feel like they've been victimized in the past. So they went out and they got big guys. Brendan Dillon is there for a purpose. So he's alongside Pionk, who can play big, but now has a true big man beside him who we've seen can be scary when he wants to be. So, I mean, because Dillon is the lefty, you can't really move him up alongside Josh Morrissey. Maybe you can flip-flop, you know, and put Dillon alongside a guy like DeMello. There's some juggling to be done there, but it really does look to me like Schmidt was brought in to be with Morrissey and Dillon was brought in to be with Pionk, and then you've got the next two guys. So, I mean, if there's a struggle for consistency or chemistry, like I'm not saying we're seeing that right now, but if you do find that along the way, I'm just not sure there's a lot of place to go without kind of upsetting the whole scheme. So what I'm watching for is these players to kind of bring each other along and come together. They're all smart hockey players. They're all veterans. They're all really motivated. So I think they're all going to be doing everything they need to get to that point. But yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. They've looked like NHL players stacked side by side, but I haven't seen anything from those top two pairings with the new players that makes me think, holy smokes, this is why they went out and did that. But that said, it's the preseason, and take the preseason with a grain of salt, especially with your veterans, because their effort level, I'm not saying they're dogging it, but they know what meaningful hockey looks like. This is not it. And so you are definitely not getting their best.
Sean, we'll let you go on this last question. Andrew Kopp, I mean, opportunity knocks for him. He's been on the left side of that second line since training camp started. We know he's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. Coming off a season where he had 39 points in the limited year in the 55 games, what's his ceiling? Could he be a 55-point guy? Does he have that in him? Or do you think that he's more just, I don't want to use the word passenger on that second line. Can he be an impactful driver to that second line in your estimation?
Oh, entirely. Entirely. And I say that because, I mean, was it 4 goals he had against Vancouver last year? And he did that on the third line, right? He'd been up on the second line and he bounced back down to the third line and then drove that line offensively. So I do believe that. And I do think that, you know, Nick Ehlers, we talked about him early in the show. I think he's the kind of guy that you're going to get 10 to 15 points a year just by getting him the puck at some point, right? Just by being on the ice and passing the puck to him, he's going to go get you some points. So I think that's going to help his numbers. I think his hockey IQ, especially on that line, is going to be valued because I think the fact that he's so good defensively, it frees Pierre-Luc Dubois up a little bit if they're on the same line together to kind of move up ice and him try and find his offensive game, which I think everyone wants from Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I do think he's a really good fit for that line. And I do think, you know, we've all seen his contract situation. I was talking about this with Mike Sawatsky from the Free Press the other day. This is a player that, you know, has probably been a little underpaid for about maybe a lot underpaid for about 4 straight years now, right? The Jets, knowing that they're, you know, if you want to keep him, you got to keep him in good sorts. And we know after arbitration last season, he came in not too happy about it. Well, what did they do to kind of mend the fences? They paid him with opportunity, right? And that's what they're doing here now. They're paying Andrew Kopp with opportunity, giving him the chance to go out now and prove what he can do. and make his money. And now next year, the Jets, it'll be up to them to try and find a way to pay him, or he's going to have got that opportunity. And if he pulls it off, he'll get a payday with someone else. So it's a great way to keep him motivated and maybe appreciative of the opportunity he's got on this team. I think everything that he's shown us is that he's the guy that does grab that brass ring, that does grab that opportunity. So I fully expect him to do that this season. Jack up his points, 55 points. I could see it happening, especially if he stays on that line. I don't know that there aren't going to be some problems. There won't be some juggling around. So maybe that that number is going to be affected by ice time should he get bounced back down to that third line, which I think we're going to see at some point this season. But yeah, Andrew Kopp has become this sneaky, good offensive player, but entirely based on his smarts and, you know, proper positioning and still being a good defensive player. So give him credit. He's you know, the absolute complete player. He's going to be important for the Jets this season.
Sean Reynolds covers the Winnipeg Jets for Sportsnet.ca. Kenny's water bottle says that Kenny never lets Rennie talk this much. And knowing Kenny himself, I would tend to agree with that comment. When's episode number 2 coming up?
We're going to do one right before the season starts, just a season tee up, and then we'll launch right into the games. It's going to be a little trickier this year because I'm back on the broadcast. So I'll be doing the broadcast in Anaheim, and then I'll be doing the broadcast in San Jose. So I'll have some responsibilities there before I jump on the show, but we're excited to get back into it. And you guys have only made me that much more excited because it's awesome to get back with you guys. I was starting to wonder if you guys lost my number. You know, I never got that call to go golfing with Ezzy out in Lactobani like I was hoping.
Never,
you
know, Sean.
Yeah,
no, we took a 5-week break, so that's why we didn't have you on since July. But we love you on.
Why didn't you invite him golfing there?
Good question.
What's your excuse there?
I didn't take a break from golfing once this year. Not one single round this year. That's what happens when you have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old, just completely deprived of golf.
I see where you are. I'll tell you this. I was on the golf course quite a bit, but I don't think you could call what I was doing golfing. So I'm right with you. So.
And I can assure you, you weren't there nearly as much as your broadcast partner, Mr.
Not Wade. Even close. Not even close.
Sean, thank you, buddy. We'll do it again.
Anytime, real soon. Guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
our pleasure. Thanks, Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And for Jay in Winnipeg, Jay Miller, pardon me, I'll say. And there he goes, Sean Reynolds, departing the program on this Saturday morning. Let's take our first break. When we come back, talk about what Sean had to say, talk about the defense, talk about the usage of Connor Hellebuck. Much more Jets talk to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Always great to chat with our buddy Sean Reynolds. And he certainly did bring some strong opinions and he certainly made some very poignant points, if you will, talking about the Winnipeg Jets. And I want to go back to his comment about Christian Vesalainen, because I thought that was particularly interesting. You know, most people have sort of, you know, to some degree assumed Vesalainen is going to be one of those guys who's almost locked into a spot. He's been very often with that third line of Kopp and Stastny and Lowry. That would make more sense. Has he done enough in your mind to really firm down that spot? Or are you left lacking from Christian Vesalainen through the first, you know, let's say half of training camp?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, first off, I haven't been at training camp, Drew. So what I'm basing it on is what
the Iceplex last Sunday I saw.
Yeah, well, that was for a Hockey Manitoba event, but I wasn't covering the Jets. But I would say
why you were there.
Yeah, we had a exhibition game for our provincial team. But when you consider that Vesalainen has probably, you know, the most to prove on this team, you probably want a little bit more in these preseason games. Like, I think, you know, based on, you know, the way he's looked in practice, I think everybody knows that he's got the size, that he's got the big shot. Like, what I noticed in the exhibition game on Wednesday is what I really like is when he uses his body as a shield and he protects the puck. Like, the guy's a big man. He's not as big as Brendan Dillon, but, you know, what is he, 6'2", 6'3", Dave? Like, I'd have to look. But, you know, Vesalainen is a guy that can kind of play that cycle down low game. Like, I don't know if Christian Vesalainen, you know, is going to be a guy that scores a ton of goals off of the rush. Like, he's not a Nikolai Ehlers or Kyle Connor type, and especially playing with Adam Lowry and Paul Stastny on that third line. At least that's where Paul Maurice has him now. I mean, he's going to have to, you know, adapt his game a little bit. He's playing the off wing. I imagine, you know, Paul Maurice might use him a little bit on the penalty kill, maybe a little bit on the power play. It's possible that he doesn't really play that much special teams, especially early in the season. But getting back to your question, yeah, like he's looked okay to me when I've watched him in the preseason, but he definitely has not been, you know, one of the Jets' top players. I wouldn't say that, but obviously there's more preseason games to come, guys, right? Like we've got two more just this weekend, four more total. So I think, you know, Vesalainen does have a lot to prove, but I do still think, Drew, to answer your question, you know, in a roundabout way, I do think he's made the team. Like I do think he is in the Jets' top 12. There's no doubt about that. I just don't see him going back to the AHL at this point.
Dave, you've seen a lot of Christian Vesalainen over the years. You know, you've seen him at the AHL level where he's been more impactful, certainly, than he has been at the NHL level. Do you, I mean, you know, it used to be Winnipeg. He's the last man standing from the from Scandinavia on the Jets. You
know, well, still Villanueva.
That's true. Sorry. I meant.
Yeah, and Henry Nickanen's a prospect that the Jets have.
You know what I meant. At the NHL level right now is what I sort of meant. But what do you think about it? Do you think that Vesalainen is a shoe-in? Do you think that, you know, Paul Maurice, as Sean alluded to, is just waiting for him to sort of further grab that brass ring and run with the opportunity?
To quote a movie line, it's time to unleash the fury, Mitch. I mean, that's one of the things that Christian Vesalainen really needs to do. And as he talked about it in his opening remarks, I really think that here's a guy who has a ridiculous shot. And that was one thing. You'd see it, and I mentioned it, I don't know if it was last week's show or the show before that, but one of those things that you'd see him and Patrick Laine in warm-up, and they'd just be firing. And it was just like, this guy's got a great shot. He just doesn't use it. He doesn't take it. And one of those things that he has to start doing is finding time and space for himself to get open, to really unleash it and get a chance to put it on net, because you're going to create something, you know, whether he scores or he creates a rebound that gets deposited by one of his line mates. Here's one of your assets. It's probably one of his best assets, and you're not using it. You just aren't taking the shots. And he's talked about that. He said, I think, I don't remember when specifically this week, but when he had a media availability, he spoke about the idea of having to, you know, engage himself a little bit more in that regard. And there's pressure, right? He's in the position of, you know, trying to secure that spot. And there's a lot of pressure, and he switched to his off wing, as he said. And so that's a position he's not familiar with. He's never really played on the right side before. So that's an issue for a player like Vesalainen, where he's trying to make the adjustment, knows there's a lot of pressure, but if you want to play in the NHL, you got to be able to handle that. You got to, you know, if you want to, you know, you want to be able to stay in the kitchen, you got to be able to handle the heat, as they say. Although with the temperatures in Winnipeg,
Your head's still on fire there, Mr. Minute.
Although I shouldn't be using this one, because I looked at the temperatures. We're going to be like 26, 27 next week. You know, getting into mid-October in Winnipeg in the mid-20s is pretty ridiculous. So I might have to switch that to different background for now.
How was the fishing trip?
Well, I was going to save it to the end because I didn't want to interrupt. But if anybody gets a chance to go up to Crow Duck Lake in the White Shell, I would advocate you do. It's they're closing up. I think tomorrow's their last day for the season, but Crow Duck Lake is insanely good fishing. It's just a phenomenal place to be. It's gorgeous. It's a back lake, so you have to, you know, get over there by boat and then ATV across. Well, you can portage as well. And the fishing was phenomenal. We had, you know, 30 to 40 pickerel throughout the course of the day. So it's a lot of fun. Okay. And now you've completely derailed me from the Christian Vesalainen talk. Thank you.
You're welcome. I do my part here.
Master Angler Manuk.
Yeah. Although some guy correct, he's like, it's not pickerel, it's walleye. I'm like, okay. I'm pretty sure in Manitoba we've been calling it
pickerel. This is a Manitoba Minnesota battle. Yeah. You know, friendly Manitoba Minnesota nice. Unless you're talking about pickerel and walleye, then it's fisticuffs first.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, the point is that he really needs to use that asset. And I think one of the things we're going to have to see is just that level of comfort. And, you know, those are guys that his line mates are guys that are going to help him get comfortable quickly. And that's what Paul Maurice is going to want him to do is to get comfortable in that role and to be able to use the natural abilities that has gotten you to the NHL and use that to the team's benefit. So I wouldn't judge him early. I would wait to see what he does 10 games into the NHL season. That's when you kind of have a meaty sample to kind of look at and say, okay, 10 games in that role, what has Christian Vesalainen done? And if he hasn't, but it's too early in a preseason, like I said, with all the chaos, to start getting worried that he's not going to turn into the NHL player you hoped he was.
And it's all about expectations, right? Like the expectations for Vesalainen shouldn't be the same. You know, we were talking about Finnish players. They shouldn't be the same as Patrick Laine. Like, no, I don't think anybody in the Jets organization is expecting Christian Vesalainen to score 30 goals and 60 points. No, it's just not realistic.
They're expecting him to win that job. I mean, if at the end of the preseason, if at the end of training camp, he's not one of the best Jets 12 forwards, he shouldn't be handed that job. And I'm not saying that he's going to be handed that job, and that he sort of seems to be, I'm going to say, he's a tweener. He's not one necessarily thought of as one of those guys who's battling for the job, but he's also not necessarily one of those guys who's guaranteed a job. I mean, he's not a Kopp, he's not a Lowry, he's not a Stastny, he's not an Ehlers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you look at a guy like last year, Logan Stanley, grabbed that job. You know, that's what he did. He grabbed the job in his offseason, he grabbed the job in training camp, and he's now an NHL regular. You know, at least he was last year, and he certainly appears that he's going to be this year. The Jets need to see Christian Vesalainen grab that job, because if, you know, Harkins, I would say, has probably outperformed them. Svechnikov for sure. You know, if Perfetti ends up, you know, having another good performance, maybe Perfetti gets an opportunity. Toninato, I mean, you know, it's not a lock. It's not locked in for Vesalainen. And I think he needs to really, he needs to show more that he deserves the job, where as opposed to being handed the job, because I don't think it's written in stone that he's going to be a member of the Jets come day one.
Let me just interject quickly.
Beating a dead horse here, Drew. We all agree on that.
Yeah, and I just want to interject quickly, Drew. The one thing you need to really be cognizant of, I think, is the fact that the Jets aren't just basing their decisions on Christian Vesalainen and on what they're seeing in preseason games.
Of course.
So what I'm saying is that, like, I mean, I've only been to training camp. I went last Sunday. So I've only seen one day. And I think, but one of the things that folks who watch the preseason games and are now making judgments based on that need to be aware of is there's a lot that's happening during these training camp sessions that are impacting the decision-making by the coaching staff. So while you may see this and you're like, well, he's not doing what he needs to do, he may be doing it sufficiently in training camp to earn the trust of the coaching staff.
Absolutely.
to have that position come game one of the regular season. That's why I said games 1 to 10, that's where you really want to start making your decisions, not necessarily what you see in a preseason, because 90% of people aren't watching what's happening at training camp.
Very, very fair point, Mr. Manuka. Absolutely. Let's take our second break of the morning. When we come back, we'll talk about Connor Hellebuck and the workload for this coming season, because that certainly, and the backup goaltender job, has certainly been a hot topic of conversation so far this training camp and preseason. Drew Mundell, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg, we are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're coming to you live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on our YouTube channel, on our Facebook page, and on our Twitter feed as well. I am your host, Drew Mundell. Dave Manuk's head is on fire. Ezra Ginsberg is looking as handsome as ever. We remind you, if you have not yet done so, subscribe to our YouTube page. That way you can get alerted each and every time we go live. Ring the bell, meaning give us a thumbs up, give us a like, leave some good comments. Tell your friends, tell your family. If you want to become a sponsor and an advertiser on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, by all means, just let us know. You can find us, of course, on our Twitter feed, on our YouTube page. You can send us an email, any of our first names at illegalcurve.com. We're always happy to have conversations with you and or your friends and family. Gentlemen, the backup goaltender job has certainly been a hot topic.
Eric Comrie,
I'd say it has for a lot of people. If you look at the chat each and every week, it's certainly been a topic of conversation in among our friendly neighborhood chatters who join us. You know, Eric Comrie has not done it at the NHL level, and we're not going to talk about Eric Comrie so much because, you know, he's going to be given the opportunity to prove himself, and there's no question about that. Simply because the Jets didn't have another option given their salary cap space. So be it there. From Connor Hellebuck's perspective, this is a guy who's certainly been a workhorse in net for the Winnipeg Jets over the years. You know, the last time there was a full season, he played 62 games, 62 starts back in 18-19, 64 starts in 17-18, the most games started by a goaltender since the lockout was Cam Talbot with 73 starts. What number are you expecting all things being equal, assume health and everything else, you're expecting to see from Connor Hellebuyck in terms of games started? Is it going to be closer to that 70 number where he hasn't quite, you know, exceeded 65 yet? Or do you think it's going to be in that 62, 63, 64 range that we've seen him during the last few full seasons?
It's the latter, Drew, for me. Like, I, you just mentioned it. Like, you guys know I've talked about this the 12 years we've been doing the show. Marty Brodeur is my absolute hero. Those days are long gone. Those days have not existed for a long time. You just mentioned Talbot. It's crazy that he played that many games. I think if you ask most coaches, whether it's a head coach or assistant coach, and especially goalie coaches, I don't think they want any goalie, you know, playing that much. So I expect Hellebuyck to be somewhere around 60 to 63 games. Maybe he plays a little bit more. I'd be pretty surprised if it's close to 70. And I think that's because you want to kind of, you know, use that term load management, even though it's become such a cliche term. But I think you don't want a goaltender playing too much. We did this exercise a couple of years back when we were still on TSN 1290 radio. You look at, you know, all the goaltenders that have won the Stanley Cup. This was before Andre Vasilevsky, of course, who plays a lot of games for Tampa Bay and played every single game on the road to the Stanley Cup this year. But, you know, Vasilevsky, Hellebuyck, like, these guys are unique goaltenders. You look around the NHL, you have a lot of 1A, kind of 1B situation. Like, even look at, you know, the newest franchise in the NHL, Seattle Kraken. Looked like Chris Drieger was going to get the majority of the starts, but they go out and they acquire Philip Grubauer, right? So you've kind of got a 1A, 1B situation. I do think Grubauer will play more games. He'll probably, you know, be around 50 to 55 games. But the point is that in Winnipeg, you clearly have one of the best goaltenders in the world. Hellebuyck is going to play the majority of the game. So, you know, some people might think because Eric Comrie is a more inexperienced NHL backup goaltender that Hellebuyck should play close to 70 games. Dave, I just think you have to be really careful, especially as the season progresses and you get into the playoffs, and we know how, you know, demanding the playoffs are. I think you have to be really careful about that. And obviously, you know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves talking about the playoffs, but, you know, Hellebuck's going to play a lot of games, and Hellebuyck wants to play a lot of games. I just don't know that I would, you know, pencil him in for 70 games. I think he'll probably be closer to that 60 game mark.
Yeah, you're right. We did do that. We did look at what the optimal number of games are for a goaltender. Even Andre Vasilevsky, I went back and looked, and he's played, you know, he plays the majority. I think last year he played 42 of the 56 games. The year prior, obviously it was shortened, and he played, I think, like 53 of 70 or something like that. So he plays the majority of the games for his team. And to your point, Connor Hellebuyck will do the same. He's probably, you know, ideally suited to play 60 to 65. That's probably the number, you know, 62 maybe. I would think it'll be interesting. Obviously, it's an Olympic year, and so there's that, of course, that has to be factored in, that, you know, guys will be going to Beijing. So that's, you know, that's a,
He's going to be one of those guys.
Well, and he'll be one of those guys for the American team, of course. So the point is that you're going to have to factor that in for, you know, when they go and when he comes back, and that sort of how that'll impact him and how that's going to go. And I'm sure the Jets, you know, Wade Flaherty and Paul Maurice have already gone over the way they're going to schedule or they'd like to schedule this season. But that's another thing that you're going to have to factor in, the wear and tear of the Olympics on Connor Hellebuyck this season. You know, such a important thing, the Olympics, and getting that opportunity for your country. So that's another thing we're going to have to factor in, you know, how that impacts him, you know, when he comes back and that sort of thing. Maybe it galvanizes him, or maybe it makes him tired. We have no idea what it's going to do. But the point is that that he's just going to, you know, to your point, he'd play every game if he could. And we all know that. You talk to him, that's just his philosophy. That's just his mantra, is that he just wants to play every single game. And a lot of goaltenders do. I mean, that's not unique to Connor Hellebuyck, but ideally, because you don't want to burn him out. And again, I'm not one of these people who is like petrified of Eric Comrie being your backup goaltender. One, because I think he's capable. Two, because the defense for the Jets is way better than it was last year, we think. I mean, of course, we haven't seen it in its totality yet. So we'll see once, you know, game six, game seven of the preseason, or the first couple of games of the NHL regular season, that's when you're going to start to see it in front of Eric Comrie, not necessarily right away, but you'll still see it. And then you'll be able to judge. It's kind of like, it's always the cart before the horse. And it's what I'm talking about with Christian Vesalainen earlier in the previous segment. And it's the same thing with Eric Comrie. See him in front of a total NHL defense. Don't see him in the chaos of a hockey game. You know, the Ottawa Senators, and like, everybody's like, he's not capable of doing it against the Senators, in, you know, on a Sunday, you know, the first game he's played in ages. So, and I'm not an apologist. I just think like, it's not something that you have to be freaked out about, because I think he's completely capable of being a backup. I could be wrong. We'll see. But the point is that you're going to have a opportunity for Connor Hellebuyck to potentially play, because you're factoring in the Olympics. Maybe he plays 60 games and Comrie plays, you know, the other 22, that sort of thing. So I wouldn't be super worried about it, but I think what it'll end up being more likely is Connor Hellebuyck plays 65 and then, you know, Eric Comrie or maybe Mikael Bruin get some games. Who knows? We'll suck up the rest of those games.
You know, far be it for me to disagree with you, fine gentlemen, but I tend to think that Hellebuck's going to play more this year than he has in the last couple of years. I think that he's more likely to play, get up there closer to that 70 game mark than we've seen. And I sort of got a couple thought processes that go.
Well, he is Drew with the Olympics for sure. When you factor that in.
Well, sure. I wasn't factoring the Olympics in. The Jets have 11 back-to-backs. So, you know, barring something completely unforeseen, you know that, you know, Comrie should be getting at least, you know, I imagine all 11 of those back-to-backs, unless there's something rare that would happen there. And I look at the workload that Hellebuyck has had over the last couple of years. Remember, the last 2 years have been weird, you know, with COVID and everything else and reduced number of games. And I think that because of that, because he hasn't been, you know, the Jets themselves haven't played 82 game seasons for the last couple of years, and the schedule has been all a little bit wonky. I think you could see Hellebuyck get closer up to that 78, that would be too high, 68.
That really is Marty Broder type of numbers.
Yeah. No, 78 would be a little bit too much. You know, that's just my thought process. Now, of course, if Eric Comrie comes in and really proves himself and proves that he can, that there's nothing to worry about, that he can do a fine replication of what Lauren Brossoit did for the Winnipeg Jets, then probably my thought process will change on that front. But given where we are today, if the Jets had to sort of mark with an X on the calendar the games that Hellebuck's going to get versus the games that Comrie's going to get, I do think Hellebuyck could be closer to 70 than we've seen, certainly in the last few seasons. And like I said, haven't seen. I don't think he's going to beat the 73 that Cam Talbot had. You know, that would be probably 5, 6, 7 years ago at this point in time. But I do think that he's going to get closer to 70 than he is, say, to 60 or 65 as it happens.
Yeah, it's possible. It's not an absurd statement, right? Because when you have one of the best goaltenders in the world, if not the best goaltender in the world, I mean, that's an option, right? Like, it's just not an option for some teams, right? Like, you know, you just don't even consider that unless you're talking about how, I think there's only two goalies that you would really be talking about that. We mentioned who the other one is, Vasilevsky in Tampa Bay, right? So it's possible, right. But Dave brings up a good point, you know, in terms of, you know, the Olympics and how that's going to factor in. That might take away, you know, a few games, especially after the guys come back from Beijing, guys, because it's not only, you know, the amount of games that Hellebuyck could play, and there's a good chance he will be the starting goalie and he could play, you know, three quarters of the games, but it's also the travel, right? Because we know that we're going over to China. It's not exactly like, you know, they're flying from, you know, Winnipeg to Vancouver. It's a long trip and you have to factor that in. But yeah, it's possible. And that's kind of why I would probably be somewhere in the middle, right? Somewhere around 60 to 65 games, but you know, we'll see what happens, guys. It depends on, you know, have the Jets locked up a playoff spot later in the season. Maybe Comrie gets a few games, you know, towards the end of the season. But back to what Dave was saying about Comrie, I agree. I think, you know, there's some Jets fans that are a little bit, you know, scared of the possibility of Comrie playing 15 or 20 games. This guy's a professional. And he's played very well at the American Hockey League level. And even though, you know, Dave sometimes sounds like a broken record, Comrie has never really been given, you know, that, you know, full-time backup role at the NHL level. But he is, you know, not only is he a good person who we've had on the show many times before, you know, he's a good goalie. So, you know, nobody should be nervous when he goes in the lineup. And I think with the acquisitions that the Jets have made on defense, Nate Schmidt, Brendan Dillon, namely, I think, you know, the Jets team defense is going to be better in front of him. I can understand, you know, Jets fans being a little bit reticent last year, you know, with the amount of shots and the high danger chances against, but, you know, let's give Eric Comrie some credit here. He's, you know, he's up to, I think, 25, 26 years old now. He's put in his time. He's earned this.
He's earned at least the opportunity. No, I mean, he's not guaranteed anything other than the opportunity, at least at the start of the season. And that's, you know, a perfectly reasonable thing. And you look at the start of the Jets season, they don't have any back-to-backs to begin the year. You know, they don't have any back-to-backs in October. Their first back-to-back isn't until November 5th and 6th, where they actually play both games at home on consecutive nights, a Friday against Chicago and a Saturday against the New York Islanders. So you would expect Comrie to get one of those. It'll be, you know, I don't think you want really necessarily want to start the season him sitting for, you know, 6, 8, 9 games before getting a crack, but that certainly could be how it works for the Winnipeg Jets, given the way that the schedule, plays out, to start the year for the Jets. Sort of weird that they go on this West Coast trip to start, and or they go on actually on 2 West Coast trips to start of their first in their first 8 games, and none of them have any back to backs involved with it. That is sort of unusual, but it's really, I think, another one of the sort of fascinating subplots to a Winnipeg Jets training camp that truly doesn't have a ton of subplots. And I think that in itself is a plot to the training camp. If you can handle my torturing of different logic there, this is just a very normal, drama-free so far training camp for the Winnipeg Jets. And it's been a while since we've seen one of those. I mean, you know, go back, you know, obviously the Dustin Byfuglien news a few years ago, and then last year with COVID and everything else. And then the year before that, you know, there were all sorts of, you know, training camp battles and things like that. That's just sort of, you know, I'm putting together the show plan, you know, last night, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's not a ton of storylines here. There's not a ton of overwhelming battles that you're watching. This isn't a team that has got a lot of drama surrounding it. This isn't a team with a lot of questions.
But that's a good thing, though, right, Drew? Sorry.
Oh, I'm not saying. I mean, it's not a great thing when I'm trying to put together a show plan. But for in terms of the Jets and the organization, absolutely, it's a good thing. It is completely just the way you want it. This is a team where it seems, as we sit here, October 2nd. So, you know, easy to say 11 days before the start of the season, that they're all on the same page. They all have this. Sort of they're all singing from the same song sheet about, you know, the Stanley Cup and expectations and everything else. And it just seems very organized and very routine so far, which is a lot better than a lot of the other teams where, you know, you look at the Canucks and they just got Hughes and Pettersson finally signed. So their training camp has been a little bit of upheaval. Travis
Hamonic. Those AAVs were a little bit low for both players, by the way.
I'm sure that
I don't know why everybody was freaking out, by the way. Does anybody in Winnipeg remember Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor not signing until sometime in training camp? I mean, happens all. No, but I'm saying, like, it's hilarious when people act like, oh my God, oh my God. And like, this is like in Vancouver. I was like, what are you guys talking about? Like,
but they're going to sign that AAV. Like, Elias Pettersson's one of the best centers in the league. Like, I just thought that was a little bit low. But
yeah, but it's only I thought
it
was
a it's only 3-year deal, though, right?
Well, I know. I still, even a 3-year deal, I thought it was a little bit low. And Quinn Hughes as well. But I mean, that's an aside. I really like Quinn Hughes. I think skill-wise, he's one of the most skilled young defensemen in the league. But hey, I mean, let's be honest, guys. Vancouver hasn't exactly done themselves any favors with some of those horrible contracts they have on the books, right? So
yeah, you're right about that.
Trini makes a good point here, Ezzy. I think it's just that, you know, there's not a lot of stories. There are a lot of stories, but they're on the positive side, which happy with. Drama gets exhausting year after year.
Drew mentioned it. You know, Drew, you mentioned Dustin Byfuglien situation, and then obviously it was all Patrick Laine, right, leading into training camp, and he had to answer all of those questions. So, I mean, we've had some star players that have really, I mean, and you could go back even further with, you know, Jacob Trouba, and if you really want to go back, you know, you could go back to Evander Kane and all of the drama surrounding him. So I think that's a good thing in terms of, you know, some of the storylines. Yeah, it does feel like more of a regular training camp of a team that was good last year, but they made some moves and now they look like, you know, they're ready to take that next step. Are they the best team in the league? Are they the most talented team in the league? No, I think Tampa Bay and Colorado are arguably, you know, still at the top of the most talented teams in the league, but I think the Jets are more improved. They're better than they were last year. That's what we were looking to see. You know, would Chevy bring in some bona fide top four defensemen? That's what he did. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, plot lines and storylines, yeah, I mean, this is kind of, you know, par for the course here, Drew. This is, you know, the third and fourth lines, you know, the defense. When you bring in guys like Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon, who have been veterans in the NHL for a long time, I mean, it just doesn't leave a lot of room for guys like Ville Heinola or Johnny Kovacevic to make the top six. You know, they're going to be in the Jets lineup sooner rather than later. But I think it's also that defense, because in years past, you know, it looked like there were one or two spots. And realistically, Sean Reynolds, I think, nailed it on the head. I think Logan Stanley has absolutely cemented himself in that top six. It's not a comparison between Logan Stanley and Ville Heinola. Heinola is going to be a great defenseman for 15 plus years. He might play in the NHL this year. It's just going to be really tough for him to be on that opening night roster.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It certainly does seem like it's going to be tough for him to make that opening night roster. And, you know, this Jets team right now is, I think, in a pretty good place. I mean, I think Dave, I mentioned it, they know where for the most part, where they all stand. There's not a lot of noise surrounding the team. And I think, you know, for a season, you know, when a season begins without any of that, I think it's a good place to be. There's always going to be noise that comes during the course of a season, just because mm-hmm. there's always guys who are going to slump, or there's a team you're going to go on a bit of a losing streak, whatever it's going to be. Noise eventually is going to infiltrate your team. But when you start without the noise, I think that's a good spot to be.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We let you know, the Legal Curve brings the noise, so there's always going to be noise with Legal Curve. But
I think Drew just is so used to chaos, Dave, that, you know, now that we have kind of this, you know, normal training camp, you know, Drew doesn't know what to do with himself. He's kind
of he can come watch AHL hockey. For that chaos. There's a lot of chaos in AHL hockey, so you guys are welcome to join me alongside in the press box at Bell or whatever it's called, Canada Life, because there'll be lots of chaos in AHL games. Not so much in the NHL. It's a little more straight line.
Speaking of AHL, you've been on the top of this story, Mr. Manouk. Why don't you give our audience an update as it pertains to the ECHL and the Winnipeg Jets' lack of an affiliate?
Yeah, so yesterday, Seattle Kraken announced that they had signed an affiliation deal with the Allen Americans, which was the last team in the ECHL. There's 27 teams in the ECHL, and that was the last unaffiliated team. And that was a team I was thinking that the Jets – who were affiliated with Jacksonville last year, for the last few years, but that affiliation deal ended and Jacksonville signed up with the Rangers. And I mean, that's not uncommon. That happens a lot where teams will switch their ECHL teams regularly. And so I thought that the Jets would naturally go to the Allen Americans because the last unaffiliated team. And I was digging around, but there was nothing forthcoming. And I thought, okay, well, and then, so anyways, ultimately Seattle signed, and now the Jets could send players to ECHL. It'll just have to be more piecemeal, like, you know, wherever a team can take a player, that sort of thing. So it's not ideal because you don't have that sort of relationship to the same degree. They may still use Jacksonville even. I'm not sure yet. Maybe I'll find out on Monday when Moose training camp gets underway. But I think it's I was looking at the lineup. I was thinking about it yesterday when I saw the news, and I think it's probably a function of a lot of the guys that the Jets have, that idea of a kind of a smaller number in training camp. You don't have that volume of players that you have to find spots for. Maybe with this young defense, that could happen. Oh, the Tulsa Oilers. That's right. That was early on. And I think that's one of the things that you see is that they've got a veteran, you know, they've got a lot of good hockey players who are going to be available for them in the AHL, like the Austin Paganskis, the Mikey Essiemontz, and of course, Jeff Mlotz, those sorts of guys, the guys they either they found, you know, this year or previously, and as well as all the Jets prospects, the Johnny Kovacevic's, the Declan Chisholm's, Leon Gavanke's, Cole Perfetti. So there's going to be a ton of guys who are going to be playing big minutes with the Manitoba Moose this year. They don't have that need necessarily to throw a bunch of guys down to the ECHL. And, you know, there's still the border issues and getting guys back and forth and that sort of thing. So I was a little surprised, but I wasn't like hugely surprised because I hadn't really heard anything from the organization with regards to that. So it didn't seem like there was a lot of movement there anyways. But yeah, that's one of those situations where you don't really see it a lot anyways. Like, you know, you've seen Michael Hutchinson, Ben Sherratt played some time in the ECHL.
Jansen Harkins
yeah. played some games down there. So, you know, every once in a while, if you want to get a guy going, it's not always a bad thing, right? Sometimes you have to go down there to kind of get back up here. And now you look, Jansen Harkins, NHL regular, fairly, we think, this year. You know, even Michael Hutchinson back in Toronto. So I think it's one of those things that it's not a huge concern. I don't think fans have to worry about it because, you know, ideally you don't have, you know, with this Jets team, you're looking at the defense. Maybe a guy like Simon Lundmark, you know, he's that, you know, right side defenseman who was over in Sweden the last few years. He'll probably be playing with the Moose. So you don't really have that concern of not really finding ice for these guys. You're going to have a lot of guys, though. You're going to have Kovacevic, Gavanke, Lundmark, and Noje on the right-hand side for the Moose. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. You'll just get these guys in, start with a rotation. It's like what Kovacevic and Stanley and Gavanke, they all kind of did this rotation, and eventually one guy takes the spot and then he moves up to the Jets. The other guy, Kovacevic, takes the spot. Now he's kind of that heir apparent for a call up with the Winnipeg Jets. So I don't think it's a huge concern right now. We'll see what happens with the Moose training camp. But yeah, so that's kind of the deal with the Jets and the Moose and not having an ECHL affiliate this year.
And you know, as Dave mentioned earlier, you know, he's going to hopefully, you know, get some more information from the Moose at the start of training camp. But Rob Mahoney just had a comment up. You know, there always can be a situation where you loan players to another team's ECHL affiliate. And obviously, Dave, I know you're aware of that, but that's just something to mention. Just because the Jets don't have an official full-time ECHL affiliate doesn't mean that they might not loan, you know, some players to, you know,
that's right,
either one ECHL team or a few ECHL teams. It's just they're deciding to go in a little bit of a different direction this year.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's look at the Jets defense. We haven't spent a ton of time talking about the D so far on this show as it pertains to training camp. You know, we asked Sean about it, Morrissey and Schmidt, Dylan and Pionk, Stanley and DeMello. It's basically been locked in at that since day one of training camp. What did you think about Sean's comment that he didn't see a lot of opportunity to sort of change things up there? And we know that Paul Maurice, you know, given his druthers, and if there's good chemistry, he's not changing things up. I mean, last year Pionk played, I mean, the overwhelming amount of the season with Derek Forbort. They were attached at the hip. And, you know, Morrissey had more of a rotating door given some of the injury issues and other things. But, you know, that's sort of those three pairs, as I just mentioned them. Do you think that those are really where Paul Maurice's mind at? And do you agree with Sean that you don't see a lot of maybe movement potentially barring injury and having his hand forced, of course?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Sean, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I'm going to be curious to see, you know, how these two defensemen, pardon me, these two top two pairs are deployed, because I think, you know, you look at Brendan Dillon and Neil Pionk, like, to me, that's a fantastic shutdown pair, right? Like Josh Morrissey, Nate Schmidt are obviously, you know, Neil Pionk, you know, isn't a slouch offensively, but, right, you know, Morrissey and Schmidt are more of puck moving defensemen, good defensively as well. But, you know, especially with Brendan Dillon, you look at his numbers, you know, with Washington and San Jose, like expected goals against, like he comes out on the positive side. So that's kind of going to be what I'm going to be interested to see. Like you could probably see Dillon and Pionk on some nights playing more than Morrissey and Schmidt. Obviously, Morrissey and Schmidt are guys that are going to get power play time, but mm-hmm. Dillon and Pionk are guys that could play penalty kill. Pionk obviously could be on the top power play unit, yeah, but you know what I'm saying here.
Game flow is, it's not right that there's a top pair and then a second pair. It's almost, you know, right, Dillon Pionk, Morrissey, Schmidt are both quote-unquote top pairs, yes, and depends on game flow as to how they're exactly going to be deployed.
Yeah, and you know, let's forget about this whole, you know, is Morrissey a number one defense? Like, I don't have any time for that. Like, I just don't think that, you know, that first off, I just don't, like, where can you go with this? Like, this is the Jets lineup. So when people say, well, you know, the Jets really need a number one defenseman, like, I like Don Lucician for the Athletic, but I just don't necessarily buy that. Like, the Jets defense is clearly better than it was last year when they were swept by the Montreal Canadiens in the second round. So is Josh Morrissey a top 10 defenseman in the NHL? No. But I do think, you know, he can get back to that form of, you know, 2017, 2018, 19, especially playing with Nate Schmidt. So I agree with you, Drew. I mean, these are like 1A, 1B. It doesn't have to be top pair, second pair, because easily your first pair could be Dillon and Pionk. I mean, I do agree. I think Neil Pionk, you know, is one of the Jets' top defensemen. Whether you think he's the best defenseman or the second best defenseman, does it really even matter, guys? Like, are we having a popularity contest here? So, I mean, the Jets' defense is going to be better. They're going to be good. And I don't think there's going to be a ton of movement. Like, yeah, Dylan DeMello could always play with Josh Morrissey. And then, you know, you could have Nate Schmidt playing with Logan Stanley. I don't see him, you know, spending a lot of the season playing, you know, in a third pairing role where he's only getting, you know, 12 to 15 minutes a night. So right now it does look like Morrissey, Schmidt, Dylan Pionk, you know, Stanley and DeMello are your pairs. But as we know, guys, there's always going to be movement. There's always going to be injuries. So, I mean, you're going to see these guys play with different partners. It's not going to be the same three, you know, pairs every single game for the whole year.
I mean, sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just, I don't get overly excited based on what you see in a preseason game. And to the point, like Sean was talking about, it's going to take a while. These are all new pairings, right? With the exception of DeMello and Stanley. So you don't just form chemistry in a minute. And one of the things we were seeing with Nate Schmidt is he's forming that chemistry with the entire team, but obviously specifically with Josh Morrissey off the ice. And I think that'll go a long way. Tucker Pullman was, you know, I'm not maligning Tucker Pullman. He's a little more reserved guy, and he wasn't necessarily suited for the spot the Jets had him in. Whereas for a guy like Nate Schmidt, who's going to be up there with Josh Morrissey. And you know what? I don't know that I necessarily agree with Sean in the regards that I think that there is some flexibility with this team. I think you can mix and match a little bit more. You know, I mean, Schmidt's the only guy who's really going to flip over to the other side from in this group.
Right.
But at the same time, there is some, you know, there's a possibility because there's not a huge disparity. I think that's kind of the advantage for this Jets team mm-hmm. is the fact that we talked about it last week. There's not a pairing here that you're saying that's a top 10 pairing in the NHL, but there's a lot of really good pairings and there's a lot of really good players that are fairly interchangeable. So if you want to put Neil Pionk up with Josh Morrissey and put Schmidt back with Dylan, or if you want to put DeMello up with any of those guys, or, you know, intersperse them however you do, I think you have that flexibility. So I think one of the benefits for the Jets this year is that opportunity to, you're going to try and develop the chemistry because you want those pairs to work, because you want in the playoffs, which all of this is geared up for, is you want to have it kind of set. But you also need to have the flexibility because if a guy gets injured, you don't want to be like, well, we played, you know, 82 games with Schmidt and Morrissey and nobody else has played with either of these guys for the entirety of the season. Well, we know obviously that's unrealistic because you always go with the defense generally, you know, or there's always going to be what you need 10 NHL defensemen at some point to be able to handle all the trials and tribulations of a regular season. So one of those things you're going to have is that opportunity to mix and match. But like I said, for now, for training camp, for the first, however long it's going to take, you're going to see Paul Maurice really allow these pairs, I think, to kind of set in stone. And then you might have, obviously, barring injury, and then you'll see maybe some playing with it afterwards.
I'm just looking at the chat, boys. Like, you know it's preseason in Winnipeg when fans are paranoid about the D pairs, right? No, I'm just kidding, fans.
Well, I mean, that's
Don't attack me.
I mean, it's a lot better than being, you know, paranoid about some of the other, you know, what's happening in some of the other cities throughout, you know, throughout the NHL. I mean, you got, like you said, we've talked about, you know, Vancouver sort of settles their drama and getting Pettersson and Hughes signed, but Hamonic is dealing with a family issue and he's not going to be around the Canucks, it sounds like, anytime soon, and they're giving him his space to deal with it. And of course, we wish him well. You have Edmonton, what's going on there? They have they've got goaltending issues. They have Duncan Keith, you know, speaking out and not really making himself sound overly intelligent, but that's a separate issue altogether, I suppose. You know, I think, you know, if you had to poll the 32 teams around the league, the ones that have the least amount of drama are the ones who are feeling better about themselves on October 2nd than the ones who, you know, are still trying to figure things out and are still really trying to have legitimate and serious training camp battles at this point in time. And that's why I think that the Winnipeg Jets sort of have a leg up on some of their other rivals throughout the NHL and throughout certainly the Central Division as well. So, I mean, we'll see. It's 11 days away. I'm ready for it to start tomorrow, to be perfectly frank. I don't need any more of these preseason games. They absolutely drive me absolutely bonkers and bananas, you know, trying to glean tons of information from them. But, you know, it's a cash grab, and we know that, and there's only so much we're going to do to be able to prevent that from happening, and that is basically nothing that we can do to prevent that from happening, as unfortunate as it may be. Let's take another break. Sorry, go ahead, Ezzy.
All right. I guess I'm not going to get my good point in there, Drew.
Okay. You were just going to say good point, Drew?
No, I was going to say, I mean, it actually sounds, you know, a little bit absurd to say this, but the fact that the Jets don't have any issues with COVID-19, like, look, even like Mackenzie Blackwood, you guys know I'm a big Devils fan. I don't know if you've been following that, but he had COVID. So he's in one of those positions where, you know, he's going to play preseason games, but he's still not sure if he's going to get the vaccination because, you know, he's had health issues surrounding COVID-19. So there's a lot of teams, you know, we know what's happened with the Zach Rinaldo situation, Tyler Bertuzzi in Detroit. You mentioned Duncan Keith in Edmonton. And we know that, you know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, had his issues with COVID back in August. And obviously now he is fully vaccinated. But, you know, you know, we joke about that, but it's actually, you know, a huge plus for a team right now to be heading in to the regular season with no COVID-19 issues. I just wanted to get that in there.
Yeah, we're all, and certainly us included, are sick and tired of talking about it. Rest assured, and we're not going to spend a lot of time, you know, talking about it here on the show. But it is still going to be a factor this season, for better or worse. It's still going to be a factor this season. And the more vaccinations you have on a roster, and the more you don't have to worry about it as a team, team, the better off you'll be as you try and slog through the 82 games that the NHL hopes to complete this coming season. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike McKenna from dailyfaceoff.com. We're going to talk about everything going around the NHL. Good friend of the show, Mike, and he's always a very entertaining personality. Stay with us. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, and our Twitter feed on this Saturday morning. 20 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. Mike McKenna of dailyfaceoff.com going to join us in a couple of minutes' time. According to Ezzy, just finished coaching his daughter's hockey practice. So, yep. You know, obviously we're going to give Mike some time to finish that off. I'm not sure if you guys are Ted Lasso fans, but I'm sort of picturing when Roy Kent was coaching his niece's soccer practice and screaming at 6 year and 7 year old girls and using curse words. Hopefully Mike doesn't take the same approach when he's coaching his daughter's hockey team. One of the many fine scenes in what is one of my favorite shows. Not sure if you guys partake in that or not.
I haven't watched it yet. How many seasons are we into now?
This is, I believe, season two or season three. This is season two. Season two is coming to a close. I believe there's another season, another episode to go before the season is up. It's a great show. I don't know why. If you guys are get an opportunity, I do give it the Drew Mandel seal of approval.
It's Jason Sudeikis, right?
That's Jason Sudeikis. Yes, he plays a...
He's great. I haven't watched it, but I understand everybody loves it. It's a great show. It looks good, but...
It's great, great.
Sudeikis is great.
Yeah, it's a very enjoyable show. That much I wanted to say. So anyways, you guys can check that out if you want. I'm not sure why
the reason why I asked how many seasons, Drew, is because if there's a show that, you know, is five or six seasons in, I don't like to watch it. Like, that's way too many episodes that I have to catch up on. So if it's
because
only...
Because you have what else going on in your life, exactly?
Oh, nothing. You know, nothing. Two kids, nothing.
Well, I'm saying this is something to do when the kid, this is something to look forward to. You can get the kids to bed and then you can sit back and you can enjoy a couple episodes of whatever TV show while you turn your brain off after working hard all day with all your right. children.
Yeah, Drew, I forgot about the 82 regular season postgame shows we have coming up. Sorry.
That's starting, of course, in about 11 days time. That's a good segue there, Mr. Ginsberg. The Illegal Curve postgame show will begin Wednesday, October 13th. Of course, we're starting with some late night games on the road in California, so you can join us after the Winnipeg Jets, after each
Illegal Curve Jet, after dark.
Illegal Curve after dark, exactly right. After each and every Winnipeg Jets game this season, the Illegal Curve post game show will go live here on our YouTube channel, so you can settle in and either rip your hair out, or, you know, for those of us lacking in hair, you know, the equivalent thereof, or celebrate one game out of the 82. Anyways, gentlemen, you know, you look around the league right now as we're waiting for Mike to join us here on the program. You know, is there anything sort of that's bubbling around the surface of the NHL that you're waiting to see, that you're sort of watching with a keen eye? I mean, we know Ottawa, you know, that they still don't have Brady Tkachuk signed. Obviously, we don't expect that to be a, you know, carry forward. But when a team doesn't get that player signed, and especially a young team like Ottawa, do you think that maybe causes a bit of a derailing to the start of their season at the very least, or maybe makes it more of a steep hill to climb to start?
Well, and especially when you're the Senators, right? And you're not expected to be a playoff team, right, Drew? So first off, I don't think it's ever a good thing when a player is holding out, right? Like, I don't care if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Ottawa Senators. I just don't think, you know, that's ever a positive thing. So yeah, I expect Brady Tkachuk to probably sign, you know, closer to the regular season. Like, maybe, you know, he sits out a few games. You don't see that very often anymore, right? Like the good old days when you would have guys, you know, like sitting out, it just doesn't seem to happen. It might happen, but if I was a betting man, I would probably say that Tkachuk signs sometime next week, especially, you know, with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes signing now, even though I don't know if Elias Pettersson and Brady Tkachuk are exact comparables, but that's what I would expect.
There he is, Coach Mike McKenna, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. Mike, good morning. How was practice?
Well, it was really good. We might actually need a cameo to find out more. In the back seat's my daughter, Kendlin. How was practice today?
Good.
There you go.
Awesome.
One word answer. Very good.
Very good. But how was the coaching? I heard the coaching was a little lacking in today's practice.
How was the coaching today, Kendall? Talk up. She's on the spot.
All good. We have young kids ourselves, so we know that when you ask them a direct question, you know, they're nonstop chatterboxes until you ask them a direct question, and then that's when you just throw them for a loop at that point in time. In any event, Mike, we appreciate you squeezing us in on this Saturday morning. We won't take a ton of your time. Wanted to touch base with you. You're now, of course, with dailyfaceoff.com, so congratulations on that. You know, you keep our buddy Frank in line there. You know how he can sometimes get a little too Philly going on and yeah. You know, he begins to throw down a little bit. We don't want to see any of that going on.
Well, we've got the Midwestern influence now. I mean, it's raining and it's St. Louis, Missouri. You can tell by my surroundings where I'm coming from. And yeah, we've got a pretty nice group of people working with Daily Faceoff, a wide mix. And it's just really cool. You know, like I get to write, do a daily streaming show, podcast, all of those things. You know, I'm not on TV per se, but it's like still within that media lexicon and doing what I love, and now get to talk about all the teams instead of just really focusing on one, which is super cool and really excited about it.
Let's start there, because you used to obviously be with the Vegas Golden Knights up until the move to Daily Faceoff. And, you know, the Golden Knights last year, they did have drama around them, I'd say, between the Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Lehner situation. That obviously has been resolved. Lehner's the man there. Fleury's in Chicago. Is that going to sort of maybe relieve some of the pressure in that dressing room? Did you get a sense that there was upheaval as it pertained to the two goalie situation? Now you have a clear number one, you got a clear number two in Laurent Brossoit. How do you think that's going to impact a Vegas Golden Knights team that a lot of people are saying should be, if not, you know, should be certainly one of the favorites in the Western Conference?
Well, I'm not sure the aspect of having like interpersonal struggles within a locker room. I don't think that would have been the case. You know, Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury got along really well, and they both played good hockey for the Golden Knights, but you did constantly have that as a question, and it turned into something that I don't think head coach Pete DeBoer liked having to deal with last year. I don't think the plan was for them to be able to have Lehner and Fleury last season. They couldn't move Fleury before the season began. They ended up with both of them, and it just turned into the constant question to the point where head coach Pete DeBoer would just say, I'm not taking this question. You'll find out who's starting when they go on the ice. That's a pain in the butt for a coach. That's tough on an organization to have to answer that same question, whether they like it or not. They're getting it. And I think it just streamlines things for Pete DeBoer. He doesn't have to field that question. He knows who he's going to go to in the net. I think it's beneficial for Robin Lehner. I mean, he is the clear-cut number one. He wants this. Like he has a burning desire to show the world that he's the guy and he can do this and prove everybody wrong. And I admire that. He wants that load. He wants to carry the team. And my only question, though, is the intangible of Marc-Andre Fleury. Those guys all believe Robin Lehner can win because he can win. But you do wonder what that locker room is going to be like without having the guy who was the face of the franchise, who an entire city latched onto as their favorite player, the most beloved player, who was unceremoniously dumped. He got dumped, guys, right? He got dumped because of his salary and because the team has chased this shiny object every summer and got themselves in cap hell. And to rectify that, they had to get rid of the most loved player in the city. I don't know how that's – and not just in the city, in the locker room. I don't know how that's going to play. You know, I wonder if a lot of the magic from that first year carrying on was because of Marc-Andre Fleury. There's teammates who will tell you that. So it's an interesting dynamic for sure. I think the Golden Knights are still going to be a hell of a team. But I don't know if it's going to be the same level as it once was, purely on chemistry and dynamics.
Some good points you make, and how can you really argue with that, Mike, when you have a future Hall of Famer? I think you agree he's going to go into the Hall of Fame, no questions asked.
Yeah.
I wanted to stick with goaltenders, and we want to ask you, you know, about some other teams and players, but of course you're a goaltender, and you know, the guy that I was thinking about, you know, this morning that I wanted to ask you about is Carter Hart, because your last year with the Philadelphia Flyers, you played, you know, with Carter Hart, and he's one of those guys that I think everyone looks at last year and you can tell that it wasn't a good year for him just by, you know, looking at his numbers, but he's clearly, you know, one of the most talented young goaltenders in the league. So the question that I wanted to ask you is, watching him last year versus, you know, his first year in the NHL. Is that just one of those years that was a tough one for a young goaltender, and you're expecting him to bounce back to where he was a couple of years ago?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm also curious as if anybody sees my daughter slamming this Gatorade behind me. She loved it. But
she worked hard on the ice.
She has, man. Yeah. We were at Six Flags until 11 o'clock last night riding roller coasters. So I don't know how to power through it. Like, guys, I already buried like 2 cups of coffee. She's on the Gatorade train. But anyway, circling back to Carter Hart. It wasn't just that the team sucked in front of him defensively last year. He had a bad year, period. And I think it can be attributed to a couple things. I do think that as soon as things went sideways, mentally it was tough on him. I think that he is so focused on goaltender and so driven on goaltender, and he's been trained to be the best goaltender in the planet since he was 10 years old, and the expectation's been there since he was 10 years old, that it finally caught up to him. Because until last year, he's been able to perform at that level. So time off is going to be good for him. I'm not confident that he's going to get back to that level, because you very rarely see somebody going from having the worst stats in the league to being top tier again. It just rarely happens. It's going to be a process. And with a young goaltender, it may take a year, year and a half to recover. You hope it's 2 weeks. And it could, because I believe in Carter Hart 100%. His skill set, his dedication factor. I think Kim Dillabaugh is an outstanding goaltending coach. But guys, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Carter Hart's going to be the starting goalie in Philly. Martin Jones has won a ton of hockey games and statistically outperformed what Carter Hart did on a really bad defensive Sharks team. There's a thought process here that Martin Jones might play 60% of those games if it's warranted, and they let Carter Hart build back into developing the goaltender he is. That thought process is out there, but it's going to come down to who's winning. If Carter Hart gets on a roll and starts winning games again, Carter Hart's going. That's what's going to happen.
Mike McKenna is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Mike is with dailyfaceoff.com. As you mentioned, he's going to do a daily show. He's also going to do some writing for them, and he's going to keep our buddy Frank Saravelli in check.
Yep. You know, Mike, one of the biggest question marks here in Winnipeg is backup goaltender, because Connor Hellebuyck obviously is a Vezina winner. There's no questions about what you're getting with Connor Hellebuyck. From a goaltender's perspective, a guy like Eric Comrie, who is as accomplished in the AHL as anyone, and what he's been able to do with the Manitoba Moose is well documented, but he doesn't have that track record in the NHL. But what's it going to be like from his perspective? I'm asking you to get into his mind a little bit, but from a goaltender's perspective, to go in and not have that question mark, not have that veteran backup who was ahead of you, knowing that you were likely going to be in the AHL, knowing that this, you know, the GM, the coach, including Connor Hellebuyck, is saying this is his job. So what would that do for a guy like for Eric Comrie, in addition to the fact that the Jets went out and improved the area they needed to, which was their defense?
Yeah, well, Dave, you hit the nail right on the head in that they're throwing their support behind Eric Comrie. It's his job. And I know that in the world, everybody thinks you got to earn it. You got to cut him into camp, and you got to blow everybody's doors off and make every save. And like, training camp games are a joke for goalies. Exhibition games are a joke for goalies. They're a good, honest to God, they're a joke for everybody. If you think that playing against a half lineup on somebody's other team and you're playing a half lineup is going to be anywhere indicative of real-time hockey in the NHL, like, you get glimmers, you get glimpses, you get to see a little window into who players are, but you don't get the full pictures. For Eric Comrie, it's about having the confidence that the team believes in him from the top to bottom. They've given this job, and he's earned it over his workload in the American Hockey League for the past 4 or 5 years. He's ridden the goalie carousel. Guys, I know how that goes. If you need anybody in this world that's collected as many track jerseys as me, track suits, like, Eric might be your guy. He's a good goaltender. I think he's ready for this. But it's got to go well from the start, because this is a question mark for the Winnipeg Jets. And again, I believe in Eric Comrie. They believe in Eric Comrie. But if you get to November or December and he has won one out of his 5 starts, it's going to start looking poor, and it's going to start turning into questions, and it's going to be questions, and people are going to wonder. So I think for Eric, it's the best situation you could ever be in. Again, you show up in town, you get a place to live. They tell you to get a place to live, you know, like that's the biggest vote of confidence you can get. I never had that in the NHL. I never was told to get a place to live in the NHL. And what that made me think was that I was always in hockey purgatory. I was going to go. I was not really going to stick on that team. When you get that vote of confidence, it helps. So it's got to go well right from the start, though. He's got to make it happen, but I think he's in a right position to do so.
Mike, we were talking about it from the Jets' perspective in that there really hasn't been a lot of drama around this team during training camp. It's been very straightforward. The word we used earlier, sort of very professional. You know, in your experience, you know, how much does having sort of a quote-unquote normal training camp benefit a team? You mentioned that, you know, the preseason games are a joke. Nobody likes playing in them. Nobody likes paying for them. Nobody likes watching them. But just having a training camp that's sort of free of drama, how much does that benefit a team at the beginning of a season?
It makes things so much smoother. Look at St. Louis. Vladimir Tarasenko requested a trade. Mm-hmm. That's not going to go well at some point this year. That's going to blow up. In some form or another, that's going to be a huge pain in the ass for the St. Louis Blues. It already is. Because no matter what they do for the first month, he still wants a trade. 2 months, he still wants a trade. Oh, he's not playing well now. Now we've got $8 million in cap hit tied up in a guy who doesn't even want to be here. You know how this works. We're in media now, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I should say I'm in media now, guys. You know what I mean? Like,
playing careers ended a lot earlier than yours.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, that's a huge problem. Jack Eichel, what's going on in Buffalo? Mm-hmm. God, I mean, not that anybody's expecting anything out of Buffalo, but it's a mess. When you walk into training camp and it's straightforward, there's no distractions, everything's smooth. When you've got as good of a lineup as the Jets do, like, guys, that I look at that roster and I ask myself, is this the Jets' year? I really believe that that team is really well constructed from defense out. I mean, I think, you know, you just the top pairing, Morrissey and Pionk, like, you got top D. Nate Schmidt's a nice addition. Okay. Like, Nate Schmidt's a defenseman to me who really performs well on a good hockey team where he doesn't have to eat up a ton of minutes. He can play three or four, but he gets your offense in gear. Is he the greatest defensive defenseman in hockey? No. But you got Dylan DeMello there. You got players surrounding him that will be a nice complement to what Schmidt does. And like what he brings into a locker room, like guys love him. And, you know, I think for Winnipeg, man, I look at that roster and like the star power up front that, what's crazy, you're in that market, right? You know what Shifley, Wheeler, Ehlers, you know, who am I missing here? Connor.
Kyle, like, Connor. Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle, like sick hockey players that us in the States, a lot of people like don't even really realize are that good, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man. I see a lot in the Jets right now that makes me think this is a team that should be a contender. And as long as Hellebuck doesn't get hurt and Comrie doesn't suck, I think that they're going to be right there.
And Mike, I think there are a lot of Jets fans here in Winnipeg and elsewhere that are probably, you know, more excited about the team's outlook this year than they have been, you know, in the last, I'd say maybe 2 or 3 years. So there's no doubt that, yeah, you know, the optimism is very high right now. And we'll let you go on this last question, because I know, you know, your daughter probably wants to get going. I'm not sure if you guys are going back to Six Flags, but
come here. Stop in. Would you want to go back to Six Flags?
Yes.
Well, we're not doing that today, but we are in a week or two.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay.
It's raining. You don't want to go now. Not when it's raining.
What is it like to have, what is it like to say to your teammates that your dad played in the National Hockey League?
It's Kenlin, this is a question for you. Make sure we can see your face. Can you ask that again, Ezra?
Is that awesome that you, Kenlin, that you can say that your dad played in the best league in the world?
It really is.
and you're a goalie too. Your dad was telling me that you're a goalie.
She wants to be. She played forward today.
Okay.
So how many goals did you score today?
About like 5 or 10.
5, 10?
Wow.
But hold, here's the real thing though. Here's the real metric that I always want to know, and the only thing that matters to me. Did you have fun today?
Good attitude.
Lots of fun.
Awesome. That's the most important. And Mike, you know, now that every time you come on the show from now on, your daughter, Kenlyn, also has to come on, right?
Well, here's the thing. Now I have to prep her. You know, we have to have a couple of points of conversation. She knows the topics we may delve into. I would like her to go a little bit further in depth at times, but who knows? Maybe we're building towards a media career for her. She's got huge dreams, though, that she wants to be a goalie at St. Lawrence like I was. And
awesome.
My wife, Mrs. McKenna, just cannot stand that this child wants to be a goalie. But you know what? It's something that we're going to bond over. And whatever she wants to do, I'll support it.
There you go. That's the right attitude all around for everybody there. Mike, that's terrific. We'll let you get started with your game. After 10 goals today, I think it should be back to Six Flags before next week. I mean, you got to fast forward that trip, I think, in my opinion. But I'll leave that parenting to you, just like we take care of our kids. Different households, different rules. That's what we say to our kids all the time here as well. Mike, we appreciate it. We'll do it again real soon. Mike McKenna with dailyfaceoff.com. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Mike. You got it, guys. Anytime. Thanks a bunch.
There he goes. Mike McKenna, always a great guest here on the program, and his daughter stealing the show as well on this Saturday morning. A couple quick notes. Looks like Paul Maurice spoke to the media in Edmonton ahead of the Winnipeg Jets game against the Oilers later on.
Isn't he in Winnipeg? Did they already go to Edmonton?
I'm pretty sure they're already in Edmonton. I mean, it's possible that they have.
I thought because it's
an air traffic controller.
Well, no, but I thought because it's preseason, you can fly during the day of the game. So usually they stay in Winnipeg and then they'd leave this morning.
You could be right. To be perfectly honest, I'm not sure. I know that he spoke with the media.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify
where he spoke to them. Anyways, he says that Eric Comrie is going to get the start in goal for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. You're expected to see Mikael Berdan at some point, if not during tonight's game, then maybe tomorrow night's game as well, because the Jets go back to back. The D pairs are Morrissey and Schmidt, Dylan and Pionk, Declan Chisholm, and Nelson Noje. The forward group is a bit of a the forward lines, at least, are going to be in the blender for a large part of tonight's game, as per Paul Maurice. So don't expect to see much consistency as it pertains to the forwards up front. Jets and Oilers tonight, and then where are they tomorrow? Vancouver?
Yep.
Vancouver, okay. Yeah.
Jets and Canucks. That shows how much attention I pay.
The to capital most of BC games.
Yeah, the capital of BC. Exactly right. We've come full circle on that line, Mr. Ginsburg. You're not going to beat that one. Thank you to everybody for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Want to give a big shout out to our sponsors, because they make this show possible. That's Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. Support these fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. On your way out of this morning's program, remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Give us a like, smash that like button. If you haven't already, subscribe to our podcast. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. All those fine places. Thank you to everybody for joining us. Another great morning in the chat room. Nice to see so many new faces and so many familiar faces. For Mr. Dave Manuk, for Mr. Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and wherever you get your best podcasts.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.